Welcome to another edition of Lex Talk History, a podcast produced in collaboration with WUKY and the Lexington History Museum. Now, here's your hosts, Lexington History Museum Executive Director Mandy Higgins and WUKY's own Alan Lytle.
Hello again, Mandy.
Hi, Alan.
Wow, what a May that we've just been through.
What a May. I am so tired, but in like the best way. Diversity Month has been incredible for 250 Lex. We've had the museum itself has been basically overrun with visitors, which has been amazing. We're so grateful. We had two really incredible international showcases in May, one with Friendship International, which is a group that's been meeting for over 30 years in Lexington, of international women who've moved or immigrated to Lexington, and helping them get acquainted with the town and acclimated. And then another organized by my friend and fellow 250 Lex Commissioner, Preeti Gupta, with a fashion show and dancing. We had the exhibit was filled to the gills with people. It was incredible. And then we premiered Bob Wilcott and Jeremy Popkin's book on Gratz Park on this month in May. So you can get that at some local retailers. Looks at a comprehensive history of Gratz Park and its influence on the development of Lexington. And so we need to catch our breath for just a minute, and then we're full steam ahead on 250 Lex for June and Come Home Month and all of the big things that are happening in June.
Yes, and believe it or not, we're almost to the halfway point of celebrating Lexington's 250th anniversary all year long.
All year long, but where has the year gone? Like, are we already at this halfway point? And maybe the like pinnacle of it, because the naming of Lexington happened in June of 1775. So we're really at that sort of the fulcrum point of the celebration. And to the credit of the commission, and particularly to Visit Lex as a partnership, June has Come Home Month, because Lexington has been home to so many of us, either we came here for college and then went off into the world, or we were born here and went off and want to come home, or we found ourselves in Lexington. So we're really excited to invite people back and to see how much the city remains historic and incredible and how much it's changed. So we're hopeful, all of you who are WUKY listeners but not Lexington residents, make your way back to Lexington in June and get a chance to be a part of our big celebration. You might see some Visit Lex Come On branding, which I think is really fun. And of course, June is Pride Month, and June is a time when Lexington really shines for being the inclusive, LGBTQ friendly city that it has become in the 20th century, so 21st century. So we're really, really excited for June.
Can't think of a better way to segue to Lex Get Into It and our guest.
Yeah, so Lex Get Into It, about the Faulkner Morgan Archive and their new exhibit, Queer Here and Everywhere. Josh, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you.
Second time guest.
Which is crazy. But I love it.
I love it too.
It's a homecoming in itself.
It's literally a homecoming.
I love it.
Tell me about the exhibit.
So this exhibit, funded by 250 Lex. So it's been about a year in the making at this point. But we've been talking about a lot is really this the culmination of not only 10 years of the archive existing, but also the decades of queer LGBTQ history that has been saved by people for generations. And so this exhibit, Queer Here and Everywhere, is really the first comprehensive exhibit of Kentucky's LGBTQ history. And so one caveat that I always want to mention when I say that is that doesn't mean this is the entire history. You know, anytime the archive tries to tell this history, we always say this is a history, not the history. You know, there's so many histories. There's so much queer history that happened in Kentucky. And so this is really just a quick glimpse. You know, we only have 8 double-sided panels, so 16 faces to do 200 plus years of history, and then, which is a lot. And so, you know, but you get a quick glimpse. And I think, again, this is the first time that we've really put all of this information together in one place. Most of the time we sort of do spotlighted exhibitions on specific topics. And so this really being comprehensive and showcasing the breadth and diversity of the queer community in Kentucky, I think has been really inspiring to see all together. When I installed it, it really was sort of powerful to see these huge banners that I've just been seeing on my computer screen for a year. And so, yeah, it feels really, really good to see it all together. Like, it's so, I'm excited for people to see it.
That's incredible. Can you tell us a little bit about how you put together maybe the earliest parts of this history? So I think for our listeners, particularly Lexingtonians, are pretty familiar with, say, the Fairness Ordinance on. But before that,
yes,
and especially, you know, 18th and 19th century history, how did you get it
there? Yeah, so I definitely think, yeah, part of the exhibit that's the most familiar with most people, I'd say, is the 70s on, mm-hmm. is really where people, you know, we have the most of our information anyway, because that's people who have donated, or a lot of, there's a lot of strength in that time period. But yeah, so early 20th century, even going into the 18th century, is very unique in how we found those stories. So mostly I would credit that to John Coleman and Bob Morgan, and then also J.P. Johnson. Mm-hmm. Those three have really done a lot of research in early queer history. And so the earliest story that's in the exhibit that actually I have a story to tell afterwards is about Robert Craddock and Peter Tardivo, two Western Kentuckians, Bowling Green area, who are buried beside each other. And their tombstone, Peter's tombstone literally says, friend, comrade in arms and friend of Robert Craddock, mm-hmm. and buried beside each other. So it's really, really sweet story there. Obviously complicated because they also owned a plantation, enslaved a lot of people, and then left their plantation to the enslaved people that was then split among them and became the historically black neighborhood in the area. Robert Craddock's fortune also was left to the city of Bowling Green to fund public schools for poor children, mm-hmm. and was still being used till the 1920s.
Wow.
Which is crazy.
And his fortune was tied up in...
Yeah, and it was tied
agriculture.
Up... agriculture. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he made all this fortune because he got the land from the Revolutionary War. So both of them fought in the Revolutionary War together. And then afterwards, you know, got money, got land, and settled there together. Never married, but were always together and died together. Or not died together, but are buried together. And actually, this past weekend, I was in Bowling Green, and I never am really there. And I just all of a sudden was like, wait a second. I'm like 10 minutes from these graves. I have to go see them. And so I went to go see them last weekend. And it was so, I don't know, it was just really, really cool to see that in person. And like, I got a selfie with it, which felt kind of weird to take a selfie with gravestones.
Right.
But also like, it's a very interesting, I don't know, it's a really rare history that you don't find very often. But yeah, these were two men who, again, they didn't say they were together, but following context clues, they were two men that lived together, never married, buried together. Comrade in arms and friends, mm-hmm. you know, very coded language. So it's really looking at that early history does require a lot of investigation, a lot of code reading, and understanding sort of how the language has shifted over hundreds of years.
Right.
Even within the last 20 years, it's, you know, language has shifted so much.
Right. And so the exhibit starts sort of early with that story and mm-hmm. Do you talk a little bit about how that investigation works or how you've.
I would say most of the panels or the information doesn't necessarily the how, because mm-hmm. We mostly just do very brief descriptions of who these people are, why they're relevant to the story is really the focus of the exhibit. We have one panel that's really early history. That's Robert Craddock and Peter Tardivo, Belle Breezing. And then there are two trans stories from like one of them, the person died in 1909. We have Aaron Bark, who's living as a trans man and who passed away in 1909. Then we have Rose Dickburn, who was living as a trans woman and passed away in 1929. So really, really early histories. And these were documented in newspaper clippings. I think Aaron Bark was from Muhlenberg County, and Rose Dickburn was from Lexington and then left in St. Louis. But then after she passed, was buried in Lexington.
Another homecoming.
But another thing where, like, she was buried under her birth name mm-hmm. and the family stamped brother on the tombstone. And so, like, that investigation, again, requires figuring out, oh, how would they have been referenced in news clippings? How do we find this information? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that early history is really kind of the base of the story that we tell, of showing the longevity of this history and how that connects to today.
Yeah, and then it moves all the way through.
Yeah, it's roughly linear, but not directly linear. So it kind of just does some spotlights. We have a couple panels that are like, you know, the early history, 60s and 70s. But a lot of it really is just kind of showcasing that breadth of history, not just a timeline necessarily.
Yeah, that's incredible. Can you tell us a couple of Lexington stories that maybe folks wouldn't be familiar with?
Yeah. One that's really interesting that I just realized is the 50th anniversary this summer or this year is the arrest of Jill Raymond. So the Lexington Six and the drama of the FBI investigating especially the lesbian community in Lexington in the 70s. And so that situation, these two women from Boston, Susan Sachs and Catherine Powers, moved here under aliases after, I believe, they bombed a bank, if I remember correctly. But they moved here running away from the FBI under aliases, invested themselves in the local lesbian community, worked at Alfalfa's downtown. But then the FBI discovered they were here. They left town, but the FBI stayed and really hounded the Lexington lesbian community and gay community in town, and ended up 6 people were arrested, 5 lesbians and 1 gay man, and Jill Raymond was the one who was imprisoned for 14 months. And so we actually have a full panel on Jill because she's been a great supporter of the archive and donated a lot of material. And so, yeah, this is the 50th anniversary of her arrest this year.
I have to tell you the story.
Please,
I don't know
do.
That I ever have. So when I was a graduate student, I have a women's studies certificate and was very interested in how change happens and those sorts of things. So I was talking to one of my mentors, and she, and I should caveat this with that I wrote about anti-war protest.
Yes.
And particularly Black Power and anti-war protest. So I'm same era, basically. So I said, oh, yeah, you know, the FBI is so dirty and look at these things that happened. And she told me about this infiltration, but didn't have the details. And so I just sort of left it as a, like, I'm never going to be able to figure that out. Like,
yeah,
there's no way that this community is going to talk to me. So I'm so glad that you have this out here and that more folks are going to know, because I think I can remember being sort of like a young 20 something and being like, well, that's really interesting, but.
Yeah.
What are we ever going to do with that?
Yeah.
And now you're,
and
you
it's also, and it's also really interesting too, because like these stories come up kind of randomly too. Mm-hmm. So I believe a couple months ago, there was actually a play produced in Louisville about the Lexington Six, and Jill ended up coming down and did a panel after the show. And then also that weekend came and visited the archive. And so me, John, Bob, Peter Taylor, and Jill sat in the archive and talked for like 2 or 3 hours just about everything. And then afterwards, you're like, oh, we didn't record that.
Of course.
It always goes.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, getting to talk to Jill and talk about this with her is just so eye-opening and cool. And even what's funny, I think she's still in contact with Susan Sachs.
Oh, wow.
And so because we included some of Susan's poetry that she's published that we have in the archive as, you know, context. And we have some of that on the exhibit panel. And she was like, oh, Susan's going to love this, which is so funny to me to have those connections.
And that's a good... you know, thinking about this historically, a lot of times people think we're only writing about people who've passed or wouldn't have an opinion about what we're saying. How have you kind of navigated that a lot of your exhibit and a lot of the archives collection is recent and contemporary?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a big core issue that the archive has always dealt with and will always deal with, is kind of our very aspirational goals of being an archive of all of queer Kentucky. And collecting not only the past, but also the present as it happens. It's kind of an impossible endeavor to collect it all and to share all those stories. But, you know, we want to at least make the effort to do so as really the only nonprofit archive doing that work. You know, there's the Williams Nichols in at U of L, and there are a lot of queer materials and queer archives in universities. But obviously at this time, that can be very complicated. But because we're independent, we see ourselves as really in a unique position to try and tell those stories. And we are not shy about our shortcomings. We very much acknowledge that we do not have all the history. One thing in particular with this exhibit, even though it was funded by 250 Lex, we really wanted to make sure that we weren't just talking about urban centers and queer history in Lexington or Louisville, but really tying in rural Kentucky. Because as we, you know, thinking about coming home too, mm-hmm. a lot of queer history in Lexington is people that were born in eastern and western Kentucky in these rural towns and then came here to find community and then maybe went off to New York or San Francisco or Boston to then, you know, make a name for themselves or to do whatever. And then sometimes they would come back. Sometimes they wouldn't. Sometimes people started in Lexington and then left. You know, there's that dynamic that exists in the queer community and in this queer history. So we really wanted to highlight that urban and rural kind of connection, because there's a lot of it in the archive. A story that you think is Lexington actually might be Muhlenberg or might be, you know, right. all these different things.
Yeah, I think that's I think we may have talked about this the last time you were here, but that idea of Lexington being this place where you can come and find yourself
yes.
and then maybe go elsewhere. And that shows up in your panels as well.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we definitely try to acknowledge Lexington as a space of community that people did come together. It's not necessarily just because of the city itself, but again, the people that came together and how they came together. You know, thinking about the bar complex, 224 East Main Street, as a gathering space. It's less about the actual building and the actual, I mean, that's obviously still important. It's a very historic building, but really thinking about the community that happened there and where queer people were gathering and documenting themselves and celebrating themselves and having queer joy. Again, it's really the highlight of this exhibit is looking at the joy. Obviously, we don't shy away from the sad stuff and the FBI and like all this, but I think we talk about that a lot. And so I see our position at the archive as being able to really highlight the joy in a lot of ways because we have that documentation.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you sort of obliquely got at this moment, but highlighting, what does it feel like to highlight joy in a moment like we're in?
Yeah, so lately I've been talking about this a lot in panels and presentations of really talking about how uniquely privileged the archive is right now, because we are not dependent on really any state or federal money. We've gotten small grants, you know, like this was technically kind of a city grant-ish, 250 Lex, I know it was different, but connected.
Yeah.
And then like we got the America 250 grant from the state to buy archival supplies. But outside of that, we really don't get funding from state or federal. And so we are not really limited by whatever is happening there unless they start to say we can't show gay stuff, which,
right.
you know, if they say that, we're probably still going to do it and then see what happens. But so we really see ourselves as privileged to be hyper visible at a time when a lot of people and organizations and archives can't. And so really this project, as well as a second project of street banners downtown, that really is the central goal, is just seeing queerness and queer joy and queer history on display so that, you know, kind of in people's faces a little bit to be like, no, this is actually reality. We're not making this up. We're not rewriting history. We're just showcasing history that's been hidden and undertold. So yeah, that visibility is really important.
Yeah. Before we transition to the street banners.
Yes.
Where can we see the exhibit?
Yes. So the exhibit will be up at the Lexington Public Library Central Branch on the third floor through June 24th. And then it will be on display. Oh, wait. June 26th. It opened May 24th. That's what it was. Through June 26th. And then it will be on display at the Lexington Pride Festival on Oliver Lewis Way on Saturday, June 28th. And then we have a little bit of a break. And then it'll be at the History Museum this fall. The dates are not off the top of my head, but I know it's August, September-ish, mm-hmm. and we'll have more information about that later in the summer, but very excited for that. And a big part of this exhibit, too, is that we want it to travel across the state. And so any venue that wants to host this exhibit, we would happily get this exhibit in your space, because we want everyone across Kentucky really to see it. That's our major goal. Obviously, it's not going to happen for everybody, but we would love to have this exhibit travel and would love to have it in venues across the state.
FaulknerMorgan.org.
Yes, absolutely. FaulknerMorgan.org. info@FaulknerMorgan.org. Social media, Facebook, Instagram. I'll respond to anything.
So tell me about the street banners.
Yes, the street banners. Oh, I'm so excited. So I had this idea when thinking, like, how can we get this imagery? Because the archive, while we're a history archive, we're unique in that we're very rich in imagery because we're founded by artists, and arts and photography has really just been a central aspect of a lot of what we collect. And so I was really thinking about, you know, this exhibit is great. I'm super excited about the exhibit, but how do we get these images even further out into the public, outdoors, where people don't have to know where to look, that they just happen upon it? And so thinking about these street banners was kind of random. I was just walking down the street and be like, these switch out very often. I wonder what the story is here. And so I started looking it up and I was like, oh, this actually isn't that difficult to do. And so we ended up getting funding from Just Fund Kentucky to print the banners, and ended up getting support from the mayor's office for the installation of them. And so now that we have the banners, we're planning on putting them up every year for Pride Month is really the plan. So every single person walking or driving down Vine Street in downtown Lexington will see these images of queer history, queer people, queer organizations. And then there's a website connected to that with more information on our website, faulknermorgan.org/banners. And so there you can read about the banner because the banner's you're driving. So right. It's just really a photo and title. Mm-hmm. But if you want to, you know, get more details about the Tri-State Gay Rodeo Association, you can go to our website and read about it and sort of get that connection just from seeing the banners. So I'm very excited about
this. That's incredible. And when do they go up?
They should be going up like this week, very soon. There was a delay in getting them printed, mm-hmm. of course, things always happen.
Yes.
But basically, as soon as they're printed, they're going up. Okay. So very, very soon. And then they should be up for most of June, I believe. And yeah, I'm super excited for those to be up every year for, you know, a decade, hopefully.
Yeah, that's incredible. And really a public piece
of
where that's going. What's next?
Pride Month.
Yeah.
So craziness, as always.
Always.
As part of the exhibit, the library, we're doing a presentation June 8th from 2 to 4 in the theater auditorium there, doing a presentation on Kentucky's LGBTQ history, especially highlighting a lot of what we talk about in the panels, giving further information since obviously the panels have to be pretty quick and short. And then we also have two walking tours coming up this month. So one of them is a detour with the Bluegrass Trust on June 4th at 6 p.m. Then we have another one with Front Runners, the gay walk run group in town, on Saturday, June 21st at 4 p.m. So very excited for both those fully free, open to the public walking tours. I know the Bluegrass Trust one has a limit of 25 because it's harder to do a walking tour with more than that the amount of people, I've learned. But very excited about those. Going to be tabling at the Pride Festival. We'll have our exhibit. We'll have our table. And then there's also a panel at Institute 193 called Depicting Desire. So it'll be John Coleman and three queer Kentucky artists talking about their own practice and relating it to the practice of John Burton Harder, who was a gay artist who was born in Louisville, moved down to New Orleans, has a large foundation. And so the panel will really talk about homoerotic imagery in art and sort of talk about the history of that, how these artists are using it today. So very excited about that collaboration. And again, talking about art and history together and queerness is always my love. So
yeah, and very much along the lines of what Faulkner Morgan does.
Yes.
and the work that you collect. Incredible. So anything else you want our listeners to know?
Follow us on social media.
Yeah,
I post a lot of fun photos.
You do. Very fun.
I love social media. I love posting photos. If you have queer history from Kentucky and you've ever wondered what to do with it, or will your story be remembered, or if you have a story that you think is valuable, please reach out to us. We love building our collections. We really want to share this history. And even if you think you're not important enough to be in an archive, you are. We really, you know, documentation of just queer life in Kentucky is enough. Photo of you and your queer friends at a picnic is what we want. We want that documentation. And so, yeah, I guess that's really, follow us, connect with us, reach out. Look at our website. There's a lot of content. That's the big thing with the archive. There's so much to look at all the time.
We're so glad to have you and to be able to work with you in town and to showcase this history, and such an important part of the homecoming month to be able to show how much Lexington and Kentucky have a long queer history, mm-hmm. and that it can be celebrated.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a big, as I talked about earlier, we're very privileged, even though we're not dependent on state or federal funding. The city of Lexington especially has been super supportive of us. Visit Lex has helped us fund with our Pride of Place walking tour, 250 Lex with this exhibit, the mayor's office helping with the banners. Like, we really get a lot of support from the city, and that does not go unnoticed, and we're very appreciative of that.
Thank you, Josh.
Thank you.
I have one question, Josh.
Yes.
You had mentioned the exhibit, of course, and you want to open that up to travel status.
Yes.
How much square space would a person or entity need in order to have this exhibit?
I don't know an exact number right now. I need to figure that out because the first time I've installed it is in the library around their atrium. So it's really not all together right now. It's spread out in a circle. It will need a decent amount of space as they are, you know, 9 feet tall, 3 feet wide, and double-sided, so people need to walk all the way around them. So that is something I'm currently in the process of figuring out. But definitely not a small room. You would need a decently sized room.
And that just illustrates the long history and voluminous history of LGBTQ in our community.
Yeah, and we want to, I mean, libraries, community centers, nonprofits, businesses, you know, wherever. If you have the space, we would love to put it there.
And Mandy, big doings at the Lexington History Museum this month, especially.
Yes, so June is a big month for us. Stay tuned. New exhibit will be opening in June, looking at 250 years of Lexington's history, complementing but by no means taking away from Queer Here and Everywhere. We'll have more on that very soon.
We keep teasing about that.
There are so many things happening in June to keep your eyes on. There's an extra gallery hop, so the museum will be open for gallery hop on June 20th from 5 to 8, and that will the exhibit will be available then to view. There are just all the things, as you can tell, my brain is just like leeching.
Literally the same.
Which is great. That's what we want in the community, and that's what we want for the history-aligned community, that so many things can be happening at once. So we're really excited for that and to be out and sharing Lexington's history in the month of its official 250th birthday.
Yeah, and a reminder, just go to 250lex.com for all of the events for June, which is homecoming month. And if you're listening to us and you're not in Lexington, but you've been here before or you used to live here, by all means, come home, because we're rolling out the blue carpet, if you will.
Absolutely. That's perfect, Alan. And when you come home, you can visit the museum on Thursdays and Fridays, 12 to 4, and Saturdays, 10 to 4. You can see Queer Here and Everywhere at the downtown branch of the public library or at Pride. And you will be able to see those banners and learn more at faulknermorgan.org or lexhistory.org.
Josh, thanks again for being our guest, our second time around.
So much fun every time.
Oh, and stay tuned for July.
Oh, yeah.
We're so excited about June, obviously.
Obviously. But also ready for July.
But also very ready for July. July's theme for 250 Lex is culinary history, or culinary month. Mm-hmm. For me, it's culinary history. So we will be joined by Director of UK Archives, Deirdre Skaggs, who's going to talk a little bit about some Lexington food lore and a scandal about poisoned salmon. Ooh. As well as her own book of recipes found in the UK archives. So we're very, very excited to have Deirdre on and to share a little bit of Lexington's history that is both its excellent food choices and its nefarious ways of using that food.
Oh my, I cannot wait for that interview. That you have definitely piqued my interest about tainted salmon.
Yeah. Gross. It did not come out of the town branch.
Good.
Though it probably would have been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and on that note, we will see you very, very soon on the next episode of Lex Talk History. Thanks again for joining us.
You've been listening to Lex Talk History, a monthly podcast produced in collaboration with WUKY and the Lexington History Museum. Subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcasts, or download Lex Talk History from the podcast page at WUKY.org. And if you haven't done so already, please make plans to visit the Lexington History Museum soon. Get started on your tour at lexhistory.org.